everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. I have a great show for all of you today. My guest will be Pam Popper. She's the founder and president of Wellness Forum Health. She's also a naturopath and author of the book Food Over Medicine, The Conversation That Could Save Your Life. And I'm really thrilled to have her on. She'll be coming on in just a little bit. But before she does, I want to go over some things going on in the news, some things in my life, some things that you might want to participate in the New York area, and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So first, this week I had the opportunity on Tuesday to sit in on a roundtable discussion that took place at SUNY Farmingdale on Long Island about the pros and cons of the proposed legislation in New York State to prohibit the sale and use of fast-release, high-nitrogen lawn fertilizers. And this piece of legislation already passed in the House, and now it's up for vote in the Senate. And they had many representatives from both sides of the table. Unfortunately, I think it was a little heavier on the industrial side, saying the pros and the cons. And basically, you know, for someone like myself in the audience, it was just so clear that it's stupid to not pass this bill. This bill would require that instead of this fast release high nitrogen fertilizers, that we use a slow release, not water soluble fertilizer that would not leach into the aquifers and into the waterways at the same rate that it does now. And we all know that we get our water from the aquifers here on Long Island. And anything we can do to reduce the nitrogen, we need to do. I mean, one of the first problems is waste, coming from wastewater, and they're working on that. But the second is nitrogen coming from fertilizers. And so it was just just didn't make sense. I mean, it's not, the people on the con side were trying to say that they were going to lose business and that the landscapers would just put down more stuff and basically break the law so that it would end up being the same amount on the, into the waterways anyway. And, and yet the manufacturers were saying that they're going to lose business, but they're not going to because they are the ones that also make the slow release. So they're still going to get the business. It's just what they're going to end up selling. So it was just infuriating. Thank God Adrian Esposito from the Citizens Campaign for the Environment was there, who really was, made a good case as to why we should support this bill. And it's just frustrating. Again, we have to really kind of look at where the science is coming from and who's doing the research. This is going to come up in a lot of things that I'm talking about today, whether it's the Food and Drug Administration, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or the Environmental Protection Agency. We have all these government organizations that are supposed to be out there researching and doing testing things and protecting us. But the reality is they don't. If you look at the amount of money that they have for actual research, it's been cut and cut and cut. They depend on the manufacturers that make the products, whether it's the pharmaceutical companies that are making the drugs or the agritech companies that are making the fertilizers or, the Monsantos out there. That's the research they're using. And then they try to tell us that it's safe. I mean, today in my email, I got a email from the Organic Consumer Association about the genetically modified apples that Amazon is selling that are also selling in other places. They're selling them as dried apple snacks. And it's being marketed as no preservatives, wholesome, 100% apple. Right? Nowhere does it say that it's 100% genetically modified. Now, there has been no testing to date on these apples to see if they're safe. And what it does, these genetically modified apples, when you cut them, they don't brown. Which, someone who doesn't want brown apples thinks, oh, great. But the browning process tells us whether something's fresh or not. And so if they're masking that process, that's not a good thing. And so it's not something that's safe for us. So we really need to stay aware of things and stay on top of them and sign those petitions and write those letters. We have to stay vigilant. Just recently, somebody turned me on to this series on TV called The Handmaid's Tale, and I'm sure many of you have heard of it. It's horrifying. I don't know if I'm going to be able to really watch it because it's so disturbing. But it's just how quickly the government just switched. And when I see what's going on in our government, you can see how it could happen. You think of Nazi Germany, how it had just happened. People weren't even aware of it. It happened so quickly. We need to stay vigilant. We need to stay on top of these things because it's scary how quickly it can change. So that is my little piece for all of you. So please sign the petitions I have on my website. Stay informed. Scott Pruitt, you know, in the Environmental Protection Agency, he is just slashing everything that has been set up to protect us, and he is just bad, bad, bad. So please sign those petitions, write those letters. We need to try to get him out of office because he is just not good for anybody. And also, you know, when I was talking about GMOs, the USDA has come out with they are in the process of formulating a label because they've heard that people want GMOs labeled. So they finally are saying, okay, we're going to label GMOs. But are they going to label them that says GMO, which is how the public knows of them? No. They're labeling them as BE, bioengineered. No one knows of these GMOs as BE products. They know them as GMO products. And the BE is, you know, in a happy sun with a smiley face underneath. It looks like a happy little, you know, icon. No one's going to think, you know, it's not like a skull with a cross across it. It's just, you know, it's dangerous. So they need really to relook at the labeling, and we need to petition and let them know that we do not approve the label that they're proposing because it's just ridiculous. And then I also wrote something about raw milk, you know, and pasteurization. It's coming up for vote again in Congress. You know, so many farmers want to be able to sell their raw milk to their customers because that's what customers want. And yet there's a law that says they can't sell milk that's not pasteurized. And so, you know, there's been lots of studies done as to how the effects of milk on the body if it's raw versus pasteurized. Now, I'm not a proponent of pushing milk on anybody because I think, you know, dairy in general is not a great thing to ingest. But if you are going to ingest it, you want to ingest it in its most natural form. That's the way that the body can assimilate it better. So, again, you know, I have a petition on my website, so please check out my website at ieatgreen.com. I also wrote up about the food additives. I'm sure you, many of you saw the article in the New York Times this week talking about food additives and how they cause cancer. And again, you know, the Food and Drug Administration has not done the research enough. There is research out there, but it's not research that they have done, and the research they are standing behind is research that the food manufacturers do. And that's just not okay. We really need to get these toxic food additives out of our food. You know, when you look at the kids, how many kids are being diagnosed with different autoimmune diseases and behavior issues, whether it's ADHD or autism, whatever it is, it's not natural. It's way out of proportion. It didn't used to be the extent that it is now. And what has changed is our food. Yes, our environment as well. But the food that we are eating, the majority of the American people are eating the SAD diet, the standard American diet. And we are exporting this diet to countries all around the world, and we are killing people all around the world with the food that we're exporting. So we are the guinea pigs. They tried all this food out on us. Many of us are waking up and finally rejecting it, so that's why they're pushing it now in other countries, because their sales in this country are going down as we wake up to the problem. But meanwhile, there's still a lot of people eating these foods, and it's just not good. We need to eat real, wholesome, whole grain, plant-based food to bring our bodies into alignment. So, and we'll be talking about that more in the show, I'm sure, with my guest today. Some things going on in and around the New York area that I want to tell you about. Also, some wonderful opportunities that you can take part of online. The Great Fish Count with the Bronx River Alliance is coming up this weekend, June 2nd. And you're going to get to wade in the water and see what lives below the surface of the river. It's a family-friendly event. It's at Concrete Plant Park in the Bronx. And I believe it's free. So that's a fun thing to do with your kids. There's a part four of an herbal certification course being offered by Ellen Kamai, who's the natural nurse, also a host on the Progressive Radio Network and a colleague of mine. And this is the fourth part of an herbal certification course, but you can start at any time, so you don't need to know the other courses before joining in. And it's online, and you can find more about it at the Natural Nurses website. I also have a link on my website. SunWorks, which is a nonprofit organization in New York City who brings wonderful science, sustainable science projects into schools throughout New York City, they're having a fundraiser coming up on June 5th. It's a sunset barbecue and lawn party that will take place at the North Brooklyn Farms in Williamsburg on the waterfront. And the cost is $175 and up. Go on to sunworks.org's website and find out more about that. June 6th, the Urban Food Policy Council from the Graduate Center is having an event called the Urban Food Policy Forum, Food, Trade, and Health. What are the connections? And this is at the CUNY Graduate School of Public Health up on 125th Street from 9 to 10:30 on June 6th. They're going to explore how two middle-income countries, South Africa and Mexico, how they've responded to the changing global food system. And we're going to be discussing the exporting of the SAD diet to those countries. Food and Water Watch is having a picket to get off of fossil fuels. Governor Cuomo is going to be out here on Long Island at the Crest Hollow Country Club on Thursday, June 7th. And Food and Water Watch is trying to get everybody out onto the streets to petition Governor Cuomo. I was up in Albany last month for a petition and rally, trying to get him to stop all fossil fuel pipelines and power plants and the whole infrastructure. I mean, he banned fracking in New York State, but meanwhile, he's supporting all the infrastructure, the pipelines, the building of power plants in New York, and the spraying of the wastewater, you know, to de-ice our roads. So we just want him to stop. And so he needs to really start walking the talk a little bit more. He's good at talking the talk, but he needs to walk it a little bit more. So come out on June 7th, please. I will be there at Crest Hollow Country Club. June 14th, there's a farm-to-table dinner to benefit the Sylvia Center. The Sylvia Center, for those that don't know, is on the Lower East Side of New York City, and they have wonderful after-school programs for kids, really trying to raise awareness about the foods they eat, and they have a organic farm up in Kinderhook, New York, called Catchkey Farm. And it will start with cocktails at 6 and then a buffet dinner at 7, and tickets start at $100. So you can either go to the Sylvia Center's website or, again, at my website. I'll have a link. On June 15th, there's a food truck rodeo at Crossroads Farm. Hopefully this one won't get rained out. They've gotten rained out so many times with these food truck events that they've been trying to have. But if you are around the Malvern area, Crossroads Farm is one of the few Nassau County organic farms. They're supported by the Nassau Land Trust. And it's going to be, a family fun event. They will have, in addition to wine and beer, which is not for the family, they'll have live music, hay rides, face painting, a bouncy slide, and different games. So that should be fun. June 19th, Slow Food North Shore, which is the slow food chapter that I chaired for so many years, and I have stepped down so that I can focus on my book. But the new board is pushing this new event that they are having and celebrating slow food and everything that it stands for, which is good, clean, and fair food. And so this is the first event under the new board. So come out and welcome the new board. That's on Tuesday, June 19th at 7 p.m. at Osteria Liana. And Osteria Liana is a wonderful Italian bistro in Oyster Bay. The chef, Peter, is very committed to the slow food principles. He sources local whenever possible. Fish is wild. I mean, he's very conscious about where he's getting his food from, and he's very supportive of slow food. So please come on out to that. Wine is being donated by Macari Wine, so wine is included in the $60 ticket price, which is for a full course, three-course family meal, and it should be a lot of fun. Many more events going on. I don't want to take the time to go over them all right now, so please check out the events on my website. And if you don't get my weekly newsletter, sign up for it at iegreen.com, because on my newsletter, I not only tell you what's going on in the news, but I have a wonderful extensive list of events in the New York area. So I want to share my recipe with you. This came to me in a dream, and I woke up and I made it, and it was so good. This is a raw triple layer banana, chocolate, and peanut butter mousse cake with a ganache topping. And it was just, I made it for a friend's birthday, and then I made it again for a barbecue. It's just a hit. So I started by soaking 3 cups of cashews in water for at least 3 hours. I think I actually soaked them overnight. But you do need to soak them at least for 3 hours. And when I soaked them, they expanded to being about 4.5 cups. So I made the crust first, and I'll tell you what's in there. And then each filling, I used some of the cashews, and I blended each filling separately in a food processor. So the crust, I did 1.5 cups of raw almonds, 1.5 cups of macadamia nuts, 1.5 cups of dates, 1/2 cup of shredded coconut, and a pinch of salt. And I pulsed that in my food processor till it was really very fine. And then I pressed it into a springform pan. And I pressed it all the way up the sides. And it's really tricky. You don't want the crust to be too thick in any one area. So you have to be really careful in the corners to really press it down. And, so with one hand you're pressing down in the corner, and with the other hand you're pressing up on the side, so that you drawing the crust up the sides of the springform pan. And when you get to the top, I take my thumb on the top of the crust, and I'm pushing in with the other hand on the side of the crust. So the crust, I make a very smooth, even thickness in the layer of the crust. And that's really essential, because you don't want to get a bite of just crust. So you really want to make sure that you press the crust against the sides of the pan equally all the way around. And then for the banana filling, the cashews, the 3 cups turned into 4.5 cups. So I took 1.5 cups of the soaked cashews, 2 bananas, 1/4 cup of maple syrup, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. And I pureed that in a Cuisinart until it was smooth. And then I put that on top of the crust. And then I put the cake or the crust with the banana filling into the freezer. And you have to wait 1/2 hour before you can put the next layer on top. But I went ahead and made it so it was ready to go. So the next layer was the chocolate filling. So again, I did 1.5 cups of the soaked cashews, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, 2 tablespoons of water, 1/2 cup of maple syrup, 1/2 cup of coconut milk, and 1.5 cups of cacao powder, which is similar to cocoa powder. If you don't have cacao powder, you can use cocoa powder. Cacao powder is just a little higher in nutrient level. It's less processed, but it comes from the same plant. And so I pulsed that in the food processor, and that was my second layer that I put on top of the banana. And then then I put it back into the freezer and waited 1/2 hour. The next layer was the peanut butter filling, and I used 1.5 cups of soaked cashews, 1 cup of peanut butter, 1/4 cup of maple syrup, and 3/4 cup of coconut milk. And I pulsed that. I didn't put any vanilla in, but you probably could if you wanted to add a little vanilla into there as well. But it didn't really need it. And I pulsed that and put that on top of the chocolate layer and put it back into the freezer. And then for the top layer, I used 1 cup of raw cacao powder, 1 cup of maple syrup, 1/4 cup of coconut oil, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. And I pulsed that. Actually, I think I used the Vitamix for that, the blender. But you could use a food processor as well. And then I just poured that on top, and that's much thinner. So it just really makes a really shiny, silky topping to the whole cake. And then before serving it, I took it out about a half an hour before serving, and I garnished it with a half a pint of fresh raspberries all around the edge. And it was just great. And when you cut it, you know, you see the three different layers, and you have the chocolate on the top, and it's just beautiful, and it's just delicious. So I hope you all make it. It will be the hit of the party. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Dr. Pam Popper, who is a naturopath, an internationally recognized expert on nutrition, medicine, and health, and the executive director of Wellness Forum Health. And the company offers educational programs for consumers and healthcare providers that facilitate evidence-based, collaborative, and informed decision-making for health-related matters. Dr. Popper also serves on the Physician Steering Committee and the President's Board for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine in Washington, D.C., and she's part of Dr. T. Colin Campbell's teaching team at eCornell, teaching part of a certification course on plant-based nutrition. I'm thrilled to have Pam with us. Pam, are you with me?
I am.
Hi, welcome. Hello. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. So I just wanted to start by asking you to tell my listeners a little bit more about Wellness Forum Health and what your mission is.
Well, we've been in business for 23 years, and our mission really is to change the dynamic of healthcare, both from the practitioner standpoint and the consumer standpoint. And so when you think about it, the informed decision-making, which is sort of our hallmark and trademark and that sort of thing, the way that people buy things, other things, aside from medicine and health, is very different from the way they consume medicine. And so think about buying a house, buying a car, picking a college for your child for a college education, a retirement account, a washing machine, a blender. I mean, we buy things all the time, and we buy a lot of things that we don't know a lot about. I don't know how to build a car or a house, and I don't know much about mechanics, but I've driven a car and bought houses to live in. You probably have too, right?
Right.
But people ask questions, and they do, and they investigate, and unless, you know, if there's something really urgent, it might change a little bit, but people manage to find out enough stuff to make a good decision, and most people look back on their decisions when they're my age, I'm in my 60s, and think, yeah, most of my decisions were pretty good. Okay, so contrast that with the way that people make healthcare decisions, and here's how it goes. People walk into a doctor's office, and the doctor says, I think you should take this drug, and the person responds, okay, and then just does it. And it's the same answer for a test or a procedure or whatever. And so what happens is these are very uninformed decisions, and often this leads to a lot of regret when people find out that some of this stuff is useless and harmful. Most of it is, actually. And so what I hear most often when I sit in the office and talk with people is, gosh, if I'd known then what I know now, I never would have agreed to, and then you can fill in the blank, whatever it is. So we feel that the same type of informed decision-making process that's required by law when you're buying a house and signing a mortgage and many other types of decisions that you make really should be the way that medicine is practiced. You get a full understanding of the risks and benefits, and then you decide what you want to do, and you respect the profession, respects the consumer's decision. I mean, I've never seen a realtor stand in the driveway of a house and say, listen, if you don't buy this house, I'm not helping you. Nobody
does
that. Right. If you don't take this car home, I'm not going to sell you any cars. All right. So
well,
people
you know,
are
you
not
say that
going to act this way.
I actually was kicked out of my pediatrician's practice. You know, they called me when my youngest was born. I guess a new vaccination, I don't know if you remember which one, was just approved to be given to newborns. So he called me up all excited and said, come in right away. You know, we just got approval for this vaccination for newborns, and you need to give it to your child. And I was like, wait a minute, just got approved, and I'm going to run in? Uh-uh. No, I don't think so. And next thing I knew, I got a letter from them saying, I'm sorry if you don't respect our things, you know, for a small thing like this. What will happen if there's something really big down the road? We can't have you in our practice.
Yeah, so you got tossed out, which is really a great honor to be tossed out of a doctor's office in our world. It means means you've learned how to stick up for yourself. And of course, this type of behavior is not tolerated anywhere else. So my whole thing is we're going to approach the buying of health information and the consuming of health information and diet information and everything related to your health the same way you do everything else. And if you do that, you'll make much better decisions. And they often will not be what your doctor or your nutritionist or your neighbor. People get a lot of health advice from places that people that aren't health professionals too. You just make better choices overall. And it's the way it should be done, and it's the way doctors should operate. And this is an interesting thing. The American Medical Association in its guidelines for practice really says that doctors are supposed to do this. They just don't, but they're supposed to.
Yeah, I'm sure. And they don't very often they'll tell you why you need to take something, but they don't tell you the risks. And I think a lot of times they don't even know the risks. They just poo-poo them.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, and I'm really hard on doctors if you've read my stuff and listened to my videos and that sort of thing. But having said this, doctors are victims of their training. And, you know, the average doctor comes out of medical school with a huge debt and all that sort of thing. And I think most people go into medicine because they want to help people, but they can't know what they're not trained to know. And so I fault them for not reading and finding out these things on their own, but they're trained this way. They don't get much training in anything other than testing, drugs, and surgery. So, you know, people will say, I'm so frustrated. I have this wrong with me, and I can't believe my doctor never even said anything about diet. Well, there are no classes. There are no courses in medical curriculum that address
I think they have
diet.
five hours worth of nutrition in their whole 4 years of medical school.
And it really, that 5 hours isn't really anything substantive. It's more like, you know, it's good to have a dietitian on staff, refer people there. It's not really anything that the doctor can use. So I think that medical education is part of fixing this. That has to be reformed, and there's just a lot to do. And so but that's what our work is all about. We work with consumers to help them become informed, and we work with providers ranging from nutritionists to doctors and anybody in the healthcare field who says, you know, I've come to the realization I need to be approaching this differently. I didn't learn these things in school, so I'm willing to undergo some post-grad education and re-engineer myself to be a different kind of doctor, nurse, practitioner, or dietitian, whatever. And that's really what our business is all about.
Mm-hmm. Now, does insurance cover any of the training that you do or any of the work? Like, I'm thinking, you know, if you train a doctor to really be a good doctor, well, then they have to spend a lot more time with you than what they're allotted with insurance. So I would think that would end up being a huge problem with insurance companies because they're not going to pay for a doctor to spend an hour with you to talk to you and find out what's going on.
They're not. They never have. And that's another problem to solve. But a wonderful gift happened in a perverse sort of way. The Affordable Care Act, which has been disastrous in a lot of different ways, did something very good for our business, and that is that the deductibles are so high for most people that they really don't have insurance for all intents and purposes, which means that they're paying out of pocket. And so what that did for us and for encouraging more people to come this direction is if you're going to have to spend a lot of money out of pocket anyway, you're more conscientious about buying what you want and evaluating efficacy, which drives a lot of people here. So I remember back in the early days, 23 years ago when I started, when people would say, I understand that what you're offering is better, but I have this Cadillac insurance plan at my work, and it pays for everything, and it's free. Well, we know there's nothing that's free, but everything's free. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to go do the free stuff, even though I know it's not as good, instead of doing what you're suggesting here. So some of the negative changes in the healthcare insurance market have actually benefited people in a perverse sort of way.
Can they count the money that they spend with your company towards their deductible?
Sometimes.
Or no, they're not going to be
deductible
anyway.
It depends on how their
health
savings account is. It depends. The another thing that's coming back right now that's really good, and I'd like to see more of this, is the health savings accounts are starting to come back. And so that is what allows people to count it toward their deductible. Under a standard Affordable Care Act plan, they can't. But with health savings accounts, you get a huge amount of latitude. And what we even had people when health savings accounts were really popular and growing, we had people who were paying for their yoga here out of their health savings account instead of having back surgery. And wouldn't you rather have somebody come to yoga than have back surgery? much better outcomes, actually. So I think with the health savings accounts coming back into fashion, which they are right now, that's going to help people a lot because it really will count and it'll be a tax deductible expense.
Mm-hmm. So on your website, you talk about an InfoMed consumer. Can you tell us what that means?
Yeah, an informed consumer. And here's what that means. And I think the first thing, we have to separate out emergency.
Ah, I get it.
In a car accident, God forbid, and you have broken bones, what you do is you let the squad take you to the emergency room, and you let those people do whatever they've got to do to put you back together and save your life. I mean, reading a copy of my book and eating a baked potato under those circumstances are probably not going to help you a whole lot. But that's really not what most of medicine is all about. What most medicine is all about is somebody goes in to see a doctor who says, you know, you're 50 years old, and I think you ought to have a colonoscopy. And the informed consumer says, that's really interesting. I'm going to be looking into it, and I'll be getting back to you and informing you of what my decision is going to be. So then the individual, and we train people how to do this. We have a lot of libraries here that people can use too, but the individual looks at colonoscopy, for example, and the first thing that this person might note is, my gosh, there's not a single randomized controlled trial that shows that colonoscopy reduces your risk of dying of colon cancer. Oh, my gosh, I thought that's why I was going to have the test. Well, let's look up the side effects of colonoscopy. Wow, 1 in 500 people has a colon tear that can be fatal. That's not it always ends up in hospitalization. That's not so good. And those fluids that they use to clean you out before the colonoscopy can cause severe electrolyte imbalances. And I'm taking one of the medications that it says you shouldn't be taking when you use those fluids. I wonder if my doctor even knew that. Well, when somebody goes through this whole process, then some other things that might go into the conversation is I have 4 people in my family who died of colon cancer, or, you know, so anyway, at the bottom line is you look at all the information, and then the consumer says, I do or do not think that this is a good idea based on what I've seen and what I know about my own personal health situation, and says to the doctor, yes, no, I'm having this test instead. As it turns out, there are some good alternatives to colonoscopy better, actually. I'm going to do this instead. And that way, not looking back after the colon tear or the electrolyte imbalance or the gets colon cancer anyway and saying, well, if I'd known all that stuff back then, I never would have let these people do this, right? So you know before instead of after.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so brilliant because, I mean, nowadays, I don't watch a lot of TV, but when I turn it on and I see advertisements for drugs, I mean, not only people going to the doctor's office and the doctor saying you should take this drug, but now people are going in going, doctor, I think I should be taking this drug.
They're actually asking for it. Right, and that's why the drug companies advertise. And this is where where it's really important for consumers to realize that they inadvertently can sometimes be part of the problem. So we're all familiar with the doctor who overprescribes, and we like to beat that guy up, prescribe too many antibiotics, whatever. Well, part of what drives that is the consumer coming in and saying, I demand to be given this drug. My son has an earache, an ear infection. I demand that you give him an antibiotic, and if the doctor pushes back and says, you know, really, research shows that most kids don't need antibiotics, and you know, it runs the risk of the irate parent contacting the practice and complaining or taking his kid elsewhere. You know, so patients have to be part of the solution and not just complain about it. You have to start taking responsibility for not asking for so many drugs. But my gosh, the drug companies aren't spending all that money to not have people ask, right? They know it works.
Right. Right. It's amazing. So to make use of the Wellness Forum Health, do you have to become a subscriber, or are there benefits to and information on your website if you're not a subscriber? How does it work?
Well, we have some things that are free. I put out a newsletter every week on Monday, and there's always free content in the newsletter. And I also do video clips on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we let people have a lot of information for free. But we have vast libraries and video. We have the largest collection of informed decision-making tools in the world, and you do have to pay for access to the type of information that would be substantive enough to allow you to make a decision about colonoscopy. colonoscopy, for example, which we just discussed. We also train people, and a lot of what the professionals who train with us do is help people navigate through the process of learning how to do the things that I just described. So, yeah, at some point in time, you really do have to subscribe and pay for the information, because it took us 23 years and an awful lot of investment to put it together.
Mm-hmm. And so can you explain to us how the subscription works?
Yeah, we have varying levels of membership depending upon what people are interested in. We have a basic membership that's just $99, and we did this deliberately. We wanted to make it so that almost anybody could afford to come here and learn the basics of informed decision making, learn how to look at a study and know what it says and the right questions to ask, that sort of thing, and also get a blueprint for the type of diet and lifestyle changes and pattern that you should adopt in order to promote, achieve, maintain optimal health. And so everything is group teach and a lot of online video and that sort of thing, but a lot of information for a very low price. And then we have 8 or 9 different levels of membership depending upon what you're interested in, which is everything from, I want to take your course on cancer because my mom has cancer and I need to learn about that, to I can't get enough of this stuff, so I just want to, I'm going to buy one of the more expensive memberships so I can have access to the library and I can do live courses. And so we have, there's a lot of variation depending upon what you want to do. And then we have school programs too. We own a school and we have school programs. So we try to match what somebody's looking for with what they end up buying from us. And it's one of the reasons we don't do online anything. You have to actually call here and talk to people, which that's really outdated, but that's really what people want, is to talk to a human.
Of course. Uh-huh. I know.
Think how the dynamic would
young
change
people
if we
today,
were doing
they don't
this
even
online.
What was that?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
So, I said, think how the dynamic of our conversation would change if we were typing online. It's just not the same thing. People want to talk to humans.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's sad because so many of the young people don't even realize that it used to be that way, that you didn't just do everything online. You actually got to call and talk to people. And, you know, the process of getting some things done was just so much easier when you could just make a phone call. But I guess, you know, some things are easier just doing it online. So who knows?
Well, the
trade-off.
It's coming back, though. The talking to people is coming back, and I'll tell you, this is kind of a funny experience, not related to healthcare, but I think it should inform healthcare providers of what they should be doing. I was having an experience, which I'm sure lots of people my age have regularly, which was trying to download something onto my phone from Amazon, and it wasn't working out. It's one of those where they tell you it's 3 easy steps, only it's 27, you know, but they only give you the 3, and you're supposed to. If a 5-year-old had my phone, he would have figured it out in a heartbeat, but I'm 62. So this little thing pops up in the bottom of the screen, and it says, if you want to talk to somebody at Amazon, just, you know, push here and we'll call you. And I thought, I'm just going to, for kicks and giggles, you know, click here because they'll never call from Amazon, right? Well, this guy called from Amazon. He sat on the phone with me for 15 minutes and walked me through downloading this. And I thought, you know, the fact that Amazon is building brick-and-mortar stores and has customer service reps to talk to you on the phone, I think it really is telling us that our society has gotten to the place where lack of human contact has been pushed about as far as it can go, and it makes the buying experience difficult, but it makes healthcare miserably impersonal and dysfunctional. And, of course, the societal implications is people aren't connected to people, and humans are by nature pretty social creatures. This disconnection is really not good for mental health either.
Mm-hmm. Pam, we're going to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I would like to talk a little bit about some of the lifestyle changes that the Wellness Forum Health actually recommends to people. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Dr. Pam Popper from the Wellness Forum Health, and you're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green. Be right back.
Hi, this is Mike Fader. I'm here live on PRN every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. My show, The Turning Point, is a blend of autobiographical storytelling, political and cultural commentary, and lively, intelligent interviews. I hear you asking, Mike, how can I stay sane in the age of Trump? No problem. Just listen to my show. It's all natural, gluten-free, and just plain good radio. That's Mike Fader with The Turning Point every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on PRN.FM.
I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear.
Progressive Radio Network is a thinking person's network for our world's progressive visionaries and stakeholders and great thinkers to assemble on a commercial-free and listener-supported network. Our provocative hosts speak freely and passionately on intriguing and urgent topics such as health and news and politics and women's issues and philosophy and more that directly impact our lives. Progressive Radio Network takes chances. Our voices and ideas are not always welcomed by corporate media. So Progressive Radio Network is a very important outlet for these great thinkers.
The Progressive Radio Network presents the award-winning Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key, and my colleague is Joe King. The show can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM on the Internet. We cover all things computing, and our viewpoint is always, what's in the best interest of the consumer community?
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and Ike Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Dr. Pam Popper from the Wellness Forum Health. And right before the break, we were touching on what are some of the main lifestyle changes that you recommend. Pam, can you share that with us?
Yeah. The first thing is diet. You know, it is really about the food. And sometimes people will question me on that. Really, is the diet that important? Well, let's put it this way. The average adult will eat a ton of food a year, a ton. That's a big amount of food. And to suggest that this would pass through you without effect is kind of ludicrous. So we start with diet. And the best diet for people to eat is a whole foods, plant-based diet, where your principal food groups are fruit, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes, low in fat, high in fiber. Doesn't necessarily have to be vegan. I mean, it's the choice I made, but it doesn't necessarily have to be vegan. But you get the dairy out of the diet. There's no justification for dairy. Get rid of the oils, which helps really a lot in keeping it lower in fat. And then you have treats on special occasions. We never propose to people that you have to give up cookies and cake for the rest of your life, but treats on special occasions and real food the rest of the time. And we have to show people how to cook and shop, and this is pretty unfamiliar to most people in terms of the way that they're used to eating. So that's where it starts, and then exercise is a big part of this. Humans are designed for movement, and until very recently, we had to move around a lot just to stay alive. It's only this recent sliver in man's time on Earth that we've had the luxury of, my gosh, you can sit in a chair and have food brought to you, right, and deliver it to your front door. You don't even have to go buy it at the store anymore. So a good amount of exercise, 5-6 days a week of exercise, and staying lean. Every extra pound of fat you carry is a risk factor for every disease you don't want to get. So getting your body in lean, fit shape and eating well. And that's the best protection you have for not getting a chronic degenerative condition, for recovering from one if you have one, and living the longest life possible. It's not a guarantee, but it's the best we have. It's the best we have for protection.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for me, having worked in, you know, the food arena for so long and watched so many frustrating things with different administrations coming and going, and, you know, I guess I've come to realize that policy really, you know, and even though I've never loved politics, but that policy really matters. And I know that you are working with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And I'm just curious, have you been able to affect policy change, and how does it feel sitting on those boards? And, you know, maybe you can share some of your successes and disappointments in dealing with that.
We've had some successes. I think one of the biggest things that we've been able to do is just shine a light on some of the stuff. You know, it's been said the best sunlight is the best disinfectant when it comes to politics and government and all that sort of thing. So at Physicians Committee, we filed a lot of lawsuits against the government, and we've won a lot of them. We filed a lot of lawsuits against the dairy industry and won. They're no longer able to make some of the claims that they used to be able to make. I think the biggest disappointment that you have in working in this arena is that the relationships are so complex and corrupt, I don't know how else to put it, that it's almost not fixable, which means that you have to focus more on people outside of the system changing their buying habits to put pressure on the system. So, you know, you take the FDA, for example. This new right to try law that got passed is a step in the right direction, but the drug companies pay the FDA close to $1 billion a year. The FDA is funded, 3/5 of their budget comes from the drug companies. And so the drug approval rate's 96%, surprise, surprise, right? And so there's just only so much you can do when you've got that kind of conflict of interest going on. Same thing is true at the United States Department of Agriculture. And I'll tell you what, if you try to do anything to interfere with these sacred cow relationships, people become vicious. Right now, one of the things that the EPA just did was to basically say you can't serve on an expert committee that sets policy while you're getting funding to do research, because it's impossible for you to have an interest in a topic and its outcome. And remove all that bias and sit on a committee. Well, you would have thought that people were being shot in the streets of Washington. I mean, there's a researcher here at Ohio State University where I live who just can't possibly understand why dedicating your life to a particular scientific endeavor would disqualify you from sitting on an EPA committee. And plus, she's funded by the EPA, so there's self-dealing involved and everything else. But so that kind of gives you an idea of how hard it is to unravel, is even when you really try to get rid of these conflicts, people scream and holler and jump up and down, and it's amazing how well they get the public on their side on some of these issues. So those are the disappointments. But where I feel very hopeful is watching the change in consumer behavior. And I think this is ultimately what's going to do the job. And what you do is very important, because you reach a lot of people. So I'm going to tell you something that's happened in Columbus that goes to my point. When I started changing my diet 25 years ago, the Kroger store near my house had one little section called health food. It was about 3 feet wide. And then there's the rest of the store, right? Nothing to eat for people who are healthy. Mm-hmm. Today, there was one health food store. It was the size of the master bedroom in my house, and you had to wear your beads and sing Aquarius when you went in there. It was a very strange and unusual place. Okay, so today, here we are 25 years later. We have three Whole Foods, and two of them are the biggest ones amongst the biggest in the chain. We have health food stores that are the size of grocery stores. The Kroger store near my house has everything I want to eat, and it's inexpensive. All the stores compete with each other now to offer healthy foods. And, of course, there's a lot of garbage in the stores, too. But my point is the mix has changed quite a bit. And there isn't a restaurant I can go to in Columbus that can't or won't prepare food for me, even while feeding some of my carnivorous friends what they want to eat. And so how did that happen? It really wasn't a bunch of benevolent grocers and food makers and restaurants that got together and said, you know, those people in Central Ohio are so nice. I think what we ought to do is do something nice for them. This is consumer demand that did this. And so I think if consumers start to really realize the power of their checkbook and collectively how much power we all have, because if we demonstrate through the power of our spending that we want healthier foods, food companies aren't stupid. Grocery stores aren't stupid. Restaurants aren't stupid. They will sell those products, and they are. So you can get to the place where you think you're banging your head against the wall when you're sitting in a meeting in Washington, and sometimes you are, and sometimes you get these little windows of light where you get something done. But you get out in the communities, and that's where you really see the wholesale change happening. It restores your faith in humanity.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, too. I think even, you know, not as intensely as you. I haven't gone the health route, but, you know, I stopped eating meat over 40 years ago. And, you know, then raised three children not eating meat. And it was really, really a challenge. And now it's so much easier, and you have more support. I mean, you know, I used to have to bring in, you know, special, you know, cookies or treats every time there was a birthday party at the school, you know, because I wouldn't let them eat that. And then, and now, a lot of schools aren't even allowing the birthday parties. You know, they just, there's too many conflicts. But I remember actually when my kids were in school, I remember the bake sale. All of a sudden, they stopped allowing homemade bakes and only packaged foods because they wanted to know what was on, what was in it. So it's like you couldn't have a mom make a wholesome, like I couldn't make my organic cookies and sell it at the bake sale anymore. Now you had to bring in, like, it could be Dunkin' Donuts or it could be, you know, Pepperidge Farm or something that was like filled with chemicals because they had to be able to see what was on the package. It's, you know, sometimes it just goes the other way. It's crazy.
Yeah, but it is changing in the right direction, and people are finding out that there are better ways to eat, and they're dipping their toe in the water. And some people get really aggravated at this. I don't like the meatless Mondays and the you know, the restaurants that have maybe one or two menu items that are either vegan or vegetarian, and people will say, well, they're just, it's like you know, just give, it's a token. And well, I'll take the token. All right. The fact that people are sometimes buying those things or you know, just not eating meat on Monday, if that's the first step in the direction for you, anybody out there looking at this, then terrific, take it. Because here's what we know. When people take a step in the right direction, it's usually followed by another one. And the process can be really slow, but that's okay. I mean, it took a long time to get where we are right now, so it may take a real long time to work our way out of it. But again, you just got to get people marching in the right direction, and a small step in the right direction is a step in the right direction nonetheless.
Oh, I so agree with you. Actually, I'm working on a cookbook, and that is really my market, is really trying to be a gentle guide to take people, you know, by the hand slowly. You know, it's like you can't go all of a sudden, you know, be a meat eater and then instantly go plant-based. I mean, you know, some people might do that, but in general, it's a gradual process, and, you know, trying to help people get back into the kitchen, first inspire them and show them there's all these other different ingredients that they don't even know about, so that your palate of what you can cook with becomes so much greater. Because you're taking some things away, so you need to replace them with things. You're not just taking away, you're also adding. And you know, how to replace the foods that you love with healthier alternatives so that you're not feeling deprived. And, you know, I think just getting people also to cook is so important. Like you were saying before, everybody's so used to getting things delivered. I mean, you know, now they're getting the groceries delivered to their food, to their door, but they're also getting the food already made delivered to the door. You know, a lot of people are just, you know, don't even cook. I mean, you know, my husband's in construction. You know, he's constantly working in apartments with these gorgeous kitchens that people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to put in these apartments, and they're not even used. You know, then the next person comes in and rips out this brand new kitchen and puts in another beautiful brand new kitchen. That's also not going
to
be
cannot use. Cannot use.
Yes. Right. It's amazing. So now, when I was looking at your
Go ahead.
At your website, you had some really great recipes on there, but they all had a component in there that was a package, something from the Wellness Forum Health that was a package component. Can you share, what are those? Are those freeze-dried things, or are they, what are they?
They're mixes. And first of all, we have a ton of recipes that aren't based on our food mixes. And my business partner, Chef Del Shroff, we're very lucky here. He's the guy who wrote the Forks Over Knives cookbook and the
Easy Cookbook.
Oh, my gosh. We eat so well here, and we're so spoiled. I can't begin to tell you. So lots of recipes that don't involve our products. But we have a line of soups and mock cheese sauces and beans and rice dishes and that sort of thing. I think there are probably 38 products in the line. And the unique thing about them is if you have four or five of these products, you can make about 25 or 30 different things, depending upon what you want to do. And it can be anything from a basic rice and vegetable soup mix that you add chopped kale and portobello mushrooms to, you know, using two or three of them to create a layered dip dish or something of that nature. So that's what the flexibility of the line and the number of different things you can do with these various products is what makes them appealing to people. Mm-hmm. So that's what those recipes are all about.
Uh-huh. Well, they looked great. And I know Forks Over Knives, is a film that I have recommended to so many people. It was one of the best films out there, I think, promoting a plant-based diet.
It was a game changer.
Makes so much sense.
It was a game changer because it became popular. And so what it showed other filmmakers is, hey, you can make a film about health or diet, and you can recoup your investment and educate a lot of people along the way. And so what's happened since then, and I love this, Netflix has a ton of these documentaries. New ones are coming out all the time. I'm in two or three new ones that are coming out this year. And they appeal to different audiences because they tackle different issues. So one of the ones that's coming out soon is The Yo-Yo Effect about the diet industry. I'm in that, and I'm writing the book based on the film. And so a lot of people have an interest in that. And some people have an interest in the issue of animal welfare and the environment. And so I really credit Forks Over Knives and Brian Wendell for having paved the way for a lot of documentaries. And just as people don't cook anymore, they don't read as much anymore either. They're much more inclined to watch something on video than they are to read a book. Mm-hmm. So we're reaching a lot of people who are not readers. And that's what we can talk about. That's not such a good idea. But the bottom line is we got to reach them somehow, and films do it. So that's been all good.
That's great. So we're just about out of time. Can you share with everybody the information about your website and how they would get in touch if they have questions?
Yeah, our website's wellnessforumhealth.com, and I'll give my personal email address is pampopper@msn.com. I answer all my emails personally within a day or so. If you want to get our free newsletter and video clips, you can get a college education 5 minutes three times a week by doing that. Just email pampopper@msn.com. So lots of free stuff on the website, lots of free stuff if you subscribe. And so we can certainly help you to shift your thinking about some of these things and give you a pretty good grounding to do it. And then you can also take a look at a lot of the classes we offer and that sort of thing online, too. And go, if you have a Netflix subscription, check out the documentaries because they're easy to watch. They're real motivational. I've had so many people over the years say, I'll never be the same since I watched this or that film, which is great to hear.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, Pam, thank you so much for joining us. Your information and your website and the work you're doing is amazing. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Everyone, sure. And everyone out there listening, thank you for joining us, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.